Welcome back to Distinct Nostalgia by MIM.
More than a podcast.
Now on Distinct Nostalgia, a house with a door. 1, 2, 3, 4. Ready to play? What's the day? It's the day we meet an absolute legend of British TV, star of kids' shows, comedy, drama, soap, film and stage. Yes, through the round window, Ashley's been catching up with none other than Derek Griffiths, MBE. Enjoy.
It's great to chat to you for Distinct Nostalgia, Derek. I'm sure people say this to you all the time, but you're probably one of my earliest childhood memories I have of you. On Play School. And I also, the other thing I always think of with you is you singing Heads and Tails.
Yeah. Well, you're making me feel 96 now.
So tell us well, obviously Play School came first, didn't it? But that was in the early 70s. What did you start off doing in the 60s?
I've always been an actor. I mean, you know, Play School was a part-time job. They found me in theatre. They found me at Greenwich Theatre. I was playing the guitar and clarinet. They said, come and do Play School. I didn't know what it was. So they had to educate me. So the whole thing about why I took it on was because with the guitar, the clarinet and the singing and the guitars, I wanted to update children's music because it was in the 40s. Mm-hmm. So I was happy to sit there and sort of compose and write, and which led on to other things.
Yeah, of course. So, but we'll talk about Play School specifically, but what were you doing then up to that point? Had you done any telly before Play School?
I did comedy playhouses. I was in the West End Theatre. I was in the West End when Barbara Windsor actually said to me, the director of a programme was looking for you, Dennis Main Wilson, who used to do all the Goons and all the top stuff. And that started the ball rolling. I heard about the job from other actors, and they were all trying to get on it. And I said, why? He said, you record 5 programs and you get 5 repeats. So the check comes in at 10 episodes, you know, which is amazing, in 1 week. So because we were doing rep, we could ad lib, we could hold our own. They never used to stop the machines when they were recording Play School because it was too expensive. So if you went wrong, you had to get yourself out of it, unless you said something foul, which I often used to. So it was a good workshop. It taught me television, I must admit.
Yeah. So in those days, when I was watching it in the 70s, it used to come on around about 11 o'clock in the morning, if I remember rightly.
Yeah. It was on about 3 in the afternoon, yeah.
Yeah, about 25 minutes, roughly, probably.
Yeah.
Were the characters already established by the time you got there? Big Ted, Little Ted, all the rest of it?
Oh, yes. I mean, it was a long-running thing. I mean, it had been on for years. I mean, I think that was late 60s when it started. Mid-60s, I can't remember. No, I came into it, 71? 71, 72. But I was in the West End. I was doing lots of theatre, so literally I didn't do it much. I did it the least of all the presenters. I did it about once every 4 or 5 months. I had left and I was doing a West End musical, which Floella was in, and I told her to go and audition for it, which of course she did, and away it went.
Yeah, fabulous. Well, that's the two people I remember from Play School are you and Floella, basically. Mm. That's the main thing, which I'm sure a lot of people probably tell you. So what can go wrong on a show like Play School then? I mean, you've got these puppets, but they're not puppets in the sense of they've got characters, but you have to pretend they've got characters, don't you? Tell us a bit about that.
Well, the whole thing about the toys were they were another group of actors. And Big Ted was always falling on top of Jemima. And I used to have to look down and say, oh, stop doing that, Big Ted. And I'd put him up and I'd let him go again. So he'd fall back down on top of her. And, you know, and the kids would be on. I know that the crew were having sticking handkerchiefs in their mouths. So I knew it was going down well. And I knew they wouldn't stop the machines unless we said something untoward, which I didn't. But there was one time when they got to the end of the program and realized they were 3 minutes short and they couldn't run the titles. So the woman, I heard this woman coming down the stairs from the director's box, and she came up and she said, "Mr. Cruz, we're 3 minutes short. Here's some plasticine, do something." And she, as she went off, the camera came round and the red light went on. I'm like, what am I going to do? So, you know, you had millions in those days because there was only, what, three channels?
Yeah.
Millions. And it wasn't just a small theatre. So I started rolling this plasticine and it, you know, this big snake came along. And that's when I saw all the cameramen getting their hankies ready. And I lifted it up and it stood there like that. And I said, "What do you think that is?" Well, you could hear the squeals from the cameraman. I said, "It's Nelson's column. Goodbye." After that, I got into every restaurant that was full. The Italian waiters used to say, "Oh, you! I don't know how you got the rule, how you get away with it. It's absolutely disgusting." So that's the sort of thing that used to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. No. Absolutely. Absolutely. So we got some questions from people, by the way, about play school, and one question, simple questions. One question was, which window was your favourite window?
Didn't have one. I had the hardest thing was to remember which one I had to go through because the camera was always lined up on it. So no, I didn't have one.
And somebody else said Big Ted or Little Ted?
Oh, Big Ted was naughty. Big Ted was in my gang. I mean, he was a bad one. I mean, I used to throw him amongst the girls and see what would happen. Definitely.
And of course, Humpty Dumpty. We can't forget Humpty Dumpty, can we?
Yeah. He would never sit still. You know, wherever you put him, he'd roll over. But I used to carry on. And Hamble was the ugly one, really. I mean, we used to play rugby with her around the studio. And her arms and legs used to go, and people used to say, be careful, we often have royalty coming in.
And yeah. Did they revamp them, or were these the same toys that they'd had for years? Did they change?
I think they were the same toys. They used to get shampooed and cleaned, and I remember going back to a reunion and they said we couldn't show Humpty or Big Ted or what, because somebody had stole it from the museum.
Oh God.
that's how you know valuable they were.
Now, these programmes were obviously for little kids, but everybody, because as you said, very few channels at the time. So a lot of daytime viewers were not just kids. They were adults as well, yeah, and teenagers and all the rest of it. So you were getting, as you say, you were getting huge viewing figures and obviously massively recognised. Mm. What was the feedback that you got from the show? Did people come up to you in the street and say things like I've just said about the round window and things like that? Would they say something about the programme to you?
Well, yeah, but they usually go on about something, some mistake or cheating that I'd done in a game or anything that was non-orthodox, they used to remember. And yeah. Anything I did, I mean, I had to do a caterpillar and I was going across the floor like that. And it looked like you were humping the floor. And of course, kids were saying, "Oh, that's great. That is, that's how a caterpillar goes." All the adults were going, "It's disgraceful. It's synthetic love making." And again, the Italian waiters used to go mad for that when I went, "Do the caterpillar." I said, "I can't do it here."
and of course, we mentioned at the beginning about the singing and the dancing and that kind of thing. That was a big part of it.
Yeah.
And obviously something that you really, really cared about. And as you say, you were trying to introduce new things to the kids. What do you remember about that side of it? Did you have to rehearse a lot of those routines or was it?
Well, to a degree, you would skimpily rehearse it because we had wonderful musicians. We had fantastic people, really good musicians. So you'd find the key and that would be it. And you'd do it on the day.
Yeah.
If it was a song I didn't know, then you would tape it. I'd take it home and learn it.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
There was very little preparation to that extent. I mean, because people were just, they let people fly.
Now, Play School went on for quite a long time. You were in it you were a presenter for a fair long time. Were you there for about
8 years.
8 years, was it? 8 years. Yeah. A long time. So you became a staple, didn't you? Everyone knew basically who you were. on TV. You and Fluella, I think, could say, were the ones that certainly stood out for me at the time. Are there any disadvantages of being a children's TV presenter?
There were none for me, apart from people saying, "Are you Shirley Bassey?" No, it always stood me in good stead. And I mean, I was filming in Namibia and I got picked up one morning from the hotel to go to the location, film location. And black guy turned around and he said to me, "I know you from television." I said, "We don't get any television out here." So I'd have got the repeats. He said, "No, no, I used to go to school in England and I watched Play School." I couldn't believe it. I'm going through the Namibian desert in a taxi and this guy says he's watched Play School. It's amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just amazing.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It was eventually, wasn't it, sold to different countries. And I think Australia had a Play School version various other countries had different versions, of which I think the Australian one is recently, I think it was still going until recently, and they put it into the Australian sort of TV Hall of Fame kind of thing, you know.
All right.
The same format that was done by, you know, by the lady here, who is still around, isn't she? The lady who created Play School is still with us. She's still around.
Who are you talking about?
Her name now. Let me have a check. But yeah, she's still with us. Joy Whitby.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And she's 91. 91.
Oh, fantastic.
And still around. And she created it in 19... Yeah, we were talking about how long it had been. It started in 1964, it looks like.
Yeah.
It goes back a long way. Great, fantastic. Now, so the other thing that I remember you doing was, as well as Play School, as a kid, was Heads and Tails. But what was all that? Just remind me. Tell me what that was that you would... Was that something... My memory of that period sort of goes a bit blurred because I was a kid. So where did that come from?
Well, there was a brilliant creator at the BBC who was also a director on Play School called Michael Cole. And he came to me one day. I was working on a production in Ealing Studios. And he said to me that... he'd got a lot of footage of wild animals and he wanted to string it all together. And would I narrate it? And he'll give me the lyrics and would I do the music? And I said, yeah, okay. And that was it. It was literally done on a shoestring and it was hugely, hugely successful.
So was that just was that a program or was that just an act as such?
No. It was a series. I think there was about two series of just wild animal footage with narration and music to go along with it.
I remember it now coming back to me. So yeah, no, that was fantastic. It's weird, isn't it, what sticks in your mind, the little things that stick in your mind. The other thing that stuck, I mean, you're, to be honest, your voice always sticks in my mind. You always know it's your voice and you've become known for your voice over the years, and of course you've added your voice to quite a few different things over the years, haven't you?
Yeah.
I was a kid of the 70s and 80s, and I used to watch children's TV, and there was always a bit of rival between BBC and ITV. Which one would you watch? Which one didn't you watch? And you were the voice of what, when ITV revamped its children's telly, you were the voice of Watch It, weren't you, at the beginning, right? At the very beginning.
I can't remember. I've done so many, yeah.
That was you were the continuity announcer. Yorkshire, I think. It was Yorkshire TV, I think.
Oh, yeah. Right, yeah.
Yeah. And you did quite a bit at Yorkshire, didn't you? Didn't you do quite
a bit? Yeah, I did. I did a mime show for the deaf.
Yeah.
I did lots of things at Yorkshire.
And you did another programme I always remember.
Don't Ask Me.
Yes, that's it, with Magnus Pike and David Bellamy. And
that's right, yeah.
Miriam Stoppard in it.
Miriam Stoppard, yeah.
How many of those did you do?
God knows, I can't remember. Probably about six or seven. That's about it.
But that was an interesting series because it was ahead of its
time. Well, it was unique. Yeah. It was unique. It broke the mold.
Yeah.
It certainly did. I haven't seen anything like it since in its format. It was interesting. But I think it's a short span life. Six or seven was about right.
Yeah. But you had to be. they needed characters on that, didn't they? And you were, you're a character, you're somebody who can bring things to life. And you got characters like Magnus Pike and David, you know, and not a lot of people today will not remember who Magnus Pike is, but I remember Magnus Pike. I remember him with his hands and in the air and all.
Oh,
that.
Yeah, yeah.
What were they like? Just remind us what they were like.
They were mad scientists, and I used to think, God, they were all brilliant. But Magnus was standing in the corner waiting to go on, and I said, "You already?" He said, "I don't know." And out of each pocket, he brought notes. So he was all genned up with all the gear just before he went. So it wasn't sort of like a mad boffin in his head. He had to prepare. So that helped. I thought, I'm not so bad after all.
And it was done in front of an audience, wasn't it? In Leeds, I think.
That's right,
and,
yeah.
You had, see, and they each one, they'd come on and they'd champion something, wouldn't they? Each yeah. person would champion a particular thing.
Yeah.
And yeah, David Bellamy, and some of the stuff was mind boggling, wasn't it? Some of it.
Well, David Bellamy was brilliant. I mean, he was such a lovely, down to earth character, and I did a sequence with him. That's the only one I can remember. It was a big fish tank, and there was an electric eel, and he was talking about this electric eel, and I was standing next to him, and he said, "It doesn't always give you a shock," and he said, "Give me a hand," and gave me a hand again, and I must have got about 200 volts. And I shot into the air. He just had a good laugh.
Now, yeah. Back onto the children's telly. You were very heavily involved in BOD, weren't you?
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
Well, that was the same man, Michael Cole, who and his wife, Joanne. She was a brilliant illustrator, and she did all the drawings and illustrations. And he came to me with the characters and said, could you do the music for the titles and the music for each character, and which I did, and that took off and was phenomenal, really. Right, I mean, it's had a lifeless success. It's gone on in perpetuity, really.
Yeah, and I don't think there were that many episodes of it. I don't think.
No,
it was quite short, wasn't it?
No.
Yeah, kind of thing. Here comes Mod.
Yeah. and the penny whistle theme was then put onto people's mobile phones.
Yes.
Yeah.
No, absolutely.
Went everywhere.
Yeah, no, absolutely fantastic stuff. And you were on the children's stuff. You've done tons and tons and tons. What was the difference then between Play School and Play Away? Was there much difference?
For me, I only did a few. I didn't do many of those, but because it came under the children's TV banner, everybody thought I was in every one, but I wasn't. I did very few of those. I did a lot of writing of music for it, and which was the carrot for the donkey. But I didn't do many.
No. There's a crossover, isn't there, between children's TV and schools TV. And you would often pop up on schools TV as well as children's TV.
Yeah.
On different things. So you were in a series called Zip, Look and Read for quite a while. You did quite a lot of
that. Yes, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
But that was just voice and vocals.
Yeah. Was there much of a difference between doing the two things, schools and children's? Was there much difference?
None at all. I'm an artist. You go into and the director says, "I want this, 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 and this," and you give it, and that's what you do. I don't think of in terms of labels.
No,
it's just doing the work.
Yeah, of course. Now you were talking about Heads and Tails, and I've just discovered Heads and Tails. You voiced and sang in 1978. That was 78. Yep. Heads and Tails. You also did. In more recent times, well, a little bit later, in the 80s, of course, when I say more recent, it's still 40 years ago. You were also involved, of course, with Super Ted.
Yeah.
You're the voice of Super Ted, one of the voices of Super Ted, because there are different voices of Super Ted, aren't there? Tell us a bit about that. How did you land that role?
It came where they asked me to sing on the LP that they were doing of Super Ted to launch it. And I remember doing some tracks and then they said, right, we're going to do the voices. So we'll do them on a Sunday afternoon. We'll pull you in. We'll give you Sunday lunch. And then we'll do the recordings in the afternoon. Well, actors having Sunday lunch and then going to a studio afterwards after a boozy lunch it was outrageous. And some of the finest actors you could work with. And there was lovely Johnny Pertwee with me and Victor Spinetti and Melvin Hayes. So just a great, great crowd. And we had such fun.
And Ashley's conversation with Derek Griffiths will continue in just a few minutes.
Distinct drama. Fresh and original.
Available now on Distinct Nostalgia, a trilogy of comedy dramas by Carl Chetty, starting with Soft Centres.
When I think of how I've wasted my life here.
Starring Sir Derek Jacobi as Frankie.
Placing handmade soft centres and nut clusters into poncy dwarf coffins is hardly an achievement.
And Joanna Lumley as Millicent.
Oh, Frankie's well past this game. He's been here, 30-odd years. He'll be carried out in a box. It's probably a gold chockey box with red bows and ribbons.
And the story continues in Hard Centres.
Well, I'm supposed to be retired, you know, but I'm back in the basement in my own little chockey grotto.
Starring Sir Derek Jacobi as Frankie and Imelda Staunton as Millicent.
I hear I like your new hat, sis.
I'll slap you in a minute, you cheeky runt. You know it is my hat, it's my hair. Sebastian, just done it. Incidentally...
Yes, and what's that dirty look for?
Your senorita's gone, but not forgotten.
My senorita...
What did you do to her? Show her your erogenous zone?
And we conclude with Dark Centres, starring Sir Derek Jacobi as Frankie and June Brown as Millicent.
Is there something going on between you two?
Chance to be a fine thing, but I'm working on it.
Helen Lederer as Mrs. Hamilton.
So he's given someone a box of hard centres instead of soft centres. So what? That's what dentists are for.
And Christopher Ryan as Mr. Hamilton.
Things are already at half-cock. My tinnitus is getting worse, plus I can't sprint for a taxi anymore without wheezing and drawing on my inhaler.
So that's Soft Centres, Hard Centres and Dark Centres by Carl Chetty. Available only on Distinct Nostalgia, wherever you get your podcasts.
If nobody was told what you were meant to do, if there weren't any rules, then we would be living in a totally different format.
A brand new podcast featuring rarely heard voices from across the UK and around the world.
Bisexuality is not really understood because people have biphobic tendencies.
And the second you mention bisexual, just their ears pick up.
Contemporary conversations around bisexuality.
Oh, well, you're still confused, right? No, I'm not confused.
We are questioned so much more than people when they come out as straight or gay.
It's intense pressure of like, am I sure? You're literally like monitoring yourself.
Every episode will include a very personal story as we try to paint a real picture of bisexual Britain.
This is Bisexual Brunch, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
If you're a Blue Peter fan, you'll enjoy something special we've got coming soon. Tim Vincent is going in search of Valerie Singleton, and he'll be meeting one or two others along the way.
Hi, Peter. It's Tim Vincent. How are you?
Oh, hi, Tim. How are you? Nice to hear from you.
I'm not too bad. I tell you why I'm ringing up. I'm trying to get hold of Valerie's number, by any chance.
What, Singleton?
Yes.
I'm not sure I've got it now. I've got an address somewhere.
Well, I'm tempted to ask, why do you want Val's phone number, Tim? I'll only pass it on to you if you divulge why you want it.
Tim Vincent, as I live and breathe. What are you calling me for? What do you want?
Hello? Tim?
Tim Vincent.
Tim Vincent. Oh, Carl. It's Tim. Just say it's about 20 minutes or something.
No, that's Tim Vincent from Blue Peter.
Listen out for In Search of Valerie Singleton with Tim Vincent very soon on Distinct Nostalgia.
Now, staying on Children's for a second, somebody asked us for your memories of film fun.
Ah, well, that was a bit of a classic because I'd left the Beeb then and Granada came on the phone and said, what do you want to do? And so we had meetings and they came up with an idea for cartoons. And I love cartoons. That's where I learnt my comedy, going to news theatres and watching Tweety Pie and Sylvester and Charlie Chaplin, all the greats.
Yeah.
And I learnt my comedy timing there. And they said, well, we'd like you to just be the front man and introduce cartoons. I said, no, that's a bit boring. I said, I'd just seen The Greatest Show on Earth, which was about a family with in a film with Peter Sellers, a family run cinema. And I thought, that's what I'll do. I'll play all the characters on chroma key. I'll play all the different characters and introduce them that way. And they said, okay. And that's how Film Fun was born.
Fantastic. I don't remember Film Fun. I don't remember. It's weird, isn't it?
Get to it on YouTube. It's worth a look.
It's worth a look. I remember, what do I remember about film, to do with films? I remember Clapperboard with Chris Kelly. Could I call Chris Kelly? I don't know if he's still around. Do you remember that? Do you remember Clapperboard?
No, I didn't.
It was like a film review programme that ITV used to do at one time.
Yeah.
So what was Granada like at that time? Because obviously
wonderful. Yeah. Wonderful.
Tell us a bit about it. What was like?
Granada was the actors' joy to go to. They looked after you very well. People that had been sort of brought up in the BBC, it was very Spartan, you know. And if you asked for a £5 increase in your wages, they would laugh in your face. And then a script would appear. I was living in Surrey at the time. A script would appear by taxi, which must have cost 15 to 25 quid, and they're moaning about giving me five, you know. I mean, ridiculous financial sort of situation. Granada was wonderful. As you walk through the door, a brown stacked envelope with cash was put in your hand to say, this is your expenses, welcome to Granada. You know, that man nearly used to get kissed every time. He probably did. And it was a great, a good atmosphere.
Yeah.
They welcomed you. When I did Film Fun, something that was never done at the BBC in all the years I was there, I did a Christmas special of Film Fun, and we really spent some hours on it, and it was quite an expensive product. The production was great, and at the end of it, it went out on Christmas Eve or Christmas Day, I can't remember. And I had to be back there next week, and I parked my car in the car park. And as I got out, I'm walking towards the door, and I could see this suit, guy in a suit standing there, very authoritative. And he was looking at me, and I thought, oh shit, have I parked in his space? I said, morning. And he said, Mr. Griffiths, I'm the controller of Granada, and I would just like to tell you that your episode of Film Fun got more screenings, he said, more viewers than Midnight Cowboy that went out at the same time. Thank you very much. Shook my hand and disappeared. I was so stunned, I couldn't believe it.
Who was it? Who was that?
Oh, I can't remember. Director General of the Granada at that time.
Yeah. Fantastic. It definitely had the building's gone now, sadly. It's all over the city, you know that. It's not the same atmosphere. You know, you used to be able to walk in there and it oozed the heritage, you know. You felt as though you were hearing Ina Sharples or Elsie Tanner in the background, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I was a fan of Ina Sharples. And when they asked me to go to Coronation Street, I thought, I could play Ina Sharples. Why don't they get offer me the part of Ina Sharples? I'd have dragged up and done it.
We'll talk about Corrie in a moment because we'll come to that. But of course, you did, over the years, appear in quite a lot of the sitcoms as well, didn't you? You appeared in different things. So everything from, I think you were in Till Death Us Do Part, one of the Christmas specials, you're in Please Sir, various things like Terry and June and things like that. What was it like transitioning from children's to comedy?
No different, because...
Was it easy or not?
Yes, totally, because I was an actor most of the time.
Yeah, of course.
So the children's thing, you just step into, you're there for the week and you come out and you're back onto the stage. So it really wasn't, there was no transition period. It was as easy as putting on a glove, really.
But do you think, what I'm trying to say is, because you'd been, you were recognised for children's, did it ever cause you any problems? Did you ever feel typecast by that?
No,
that's good.
No, because I'd set myself as an actor before I got anywhere near play school. And I was always working as an actor while I was doing play school. There was no drain from one to the other, you know.
No. So what do you remember about the comedy stuff that you were in then? What stands out in terms of the comedy programs that you were in, say, in the 70s?
I think the short pieces I did with Morecambe and Wise, working with people like Barry Cryer, the writer, working with Terry and June. That was fun. We had a great time. And I then worked with Terry Scott in the West End on in a comedy play.
You were the prince in Terry and June.
That's right. Yeah. An Arab prince. Yeah. Yeah. We had a lot of laughs, a lot of laughs.
I can imagine. I can imagine. And what about what I mean, at the time as well, we don't have to go massive detail on this, but I'm going to bring it up. You were one of the few, you, Fluella, just trying to think of other people now, Don Warrington, Trevor McDonald. You were one of the few black people on TV, really, mm-hmm. Let's face it.
Shirley Bassey. Very few
of it. Shirley Bassey, of course, yeah. Which you, as you say, you got keep getting confused for. what's your memories of that? I mean, obviously you were well known. Everyone loved you as actors and characters and all the rest of it on TV. Did you? You were booking a trend at the time. There wasn't many people out there who were doing.
No. Yeah.
What's your memories of it? I mean, was it still a difficult? It was obviously a difficult time for other people. But what's your memories of that side of it?
I didn't take that on board really, because you know, if somebody said to you, "Here's a job," you went for it, like a wolf after a rabbit. I think the difficulty of answering that question is that you don't know how many people said, well, we can't have him because he's black.
Yeah.
All I remember is working nonstop all the time with people that wanted me there. I did actually say on an interview once, well, no, I've never been typecast. I've always played different bits and pieces. And they said, what would you like to do? I said, well, I'd like to do a bit more Shakespeare. And I won't be able to do Noel Coward, because in the 20s and 30s, you know, there was nobody around of my colour to take on a lead role. And bugger me, months later, the Royal Exchange Theatre Manchester said, would you come and do Noel Coward nude with violin playing the lead? So there's your question answered.
There you go, ahead of its time, because that wouldn't be a problem now, would it, yeah, at all? In any way, shape, form. What was it like then being in programmes like, I don't think you weren't in Nearest and Dearest, but you were in... You're in Till Death Us Do Part, which had a reputation.
Yeah.
I mean, I personally think people get it wrong, because I think I always think the joke was on Warren Mitchell's character.
Yeah, absolutely.
But what was your impression of it at the time? What's your impression of it now when you look back at it?
Well, I think it was a brilliant piece of writing. Johnny Spate was a clever man. Mm-hmm. And he didn't think about stars or black or white. He just wanted to put across what was happening on his street that day.
Yeah.
And that's what he did. He wrote what he saw and embellished it.
Yeah.
The scene I had with Warren was to sell him a dodgy watch in a pub. And when I used to go down Petticoat Lane as a boy, I used to stand and watch the guys work. Right, no rubbish sold here. Come on, darling, give us your fiver. Come on. No, don't touch the goods. They won't stand it. I mean, they had all the patter and it was non-stop. And that's what I did to Warren. He didn't get, every time he went to open his mouth, I did pages more. And he gave me the money and took the watch just to get rid of me. No, it was a good piece of...
It was very good. You're right, exceptionally good writing.
Really. We're looking through a window at life, yeah, as it is.
There were people just like him everywhere.
Absolutely. Like how could we do that today with all the PC crap that's going on? You wouldn't give a decent account of it.
And the same with Nearest and Dearest, wasn't it? You know, nobody shows that now. But again, the joke was on the...
Yeah.
The racism, wasn't it? On the, the person who's being racist. No, it's interesting. But as well as children, as well as you know, the dramas and things that you've been in, and you've been in quite a few of those, from, you know, Casualty, Holby City, Silent Witness, all the rest of it, Midsummer Murders, etc., all those kind of things that you've been in. You were also in quite a number of films as well, mm-hmm. and quite a few of those films were comedy films. I'm just going to mention a few of them. You were in the Rising Damp film, which, of course, sadly came out after poor old Richard Beckinsale had died.
Yeah.
Christopher Strawley had to more or less play the part. And I know Chris quite well, and we've talked quite at length about how Leonard Rossiter gave him quite a hard time for in that. Basically, he wanted him to play like Richard Beckinsale. You know?
Yeah.
What's your memories of that? Memories of that film? Do you remember it well?
I'll tell you what. My memory of that film was I was working at ATV on the other side of the road in Elstree.
Yeah.
And they said, "We want you to. Could you come in and play the referee?" I said, "I'm under contract. I can't get away." They said, "We could do it in a lunch hour." I said, "All right." He said, "Tomorrow lunch hour and we'll do it." And he said, "You just wing it." And I got into the ring, did it in my lunch hour. I got off, went back to ATV, and I can't remember anything about it. It was like, did I do that? I can't remember. Literally,
this was the period, of course, where they kept, that whenever there was a comedy series on the TV, they would make a film of
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't do that anymore, of course. One of the other ones that you were in was, you played in Mir in Are You Being Served?
Yeah, well, that was, again, a lunch hour job. And I just rushed in, did it, and left.
Yeah. That was the one where they all went away on holiday, wasn't it? They were on their holidays or something, I think.
Can't remember. It was a lunch hour.
And then a few of the other ones, were all comedy ones, were Up Pompeii.
Yeah.
Steam Slave.
Yeah.
Obviously with Frankie Howard.
Yeah.
Up the Chastity Belt. What's the other one? The Elf Garnet Saga, which I only recently discovered. Do you remember any of those? Any of those stand out for you?
Yeah, but it was all very short stuff. I mean, you know, it was lunch hour jobs, which they put me in because they knew that they put me in a situation to say go, and I would do something, you know, and they said, "Great, that was fine. Thank you, cut. Thank you, Derek. Bye."
It's something slightly different from the comedy, which I think you were perfect for, was, of course, doing the voices in Watership Down.
I remember that was off Good Street just off Tottenham Court Road. And we sat in the studio and all these eminent faces. I mean, there was just, you know, I was a lad then. And I thought, my God, all these eminent people. And he said, "Right, let's get down." And they showed us the drawings, as they did in Super 10. They showed us the drawings of the character, and they said, "That's the voice you've got to find." Yeah. And that was it.
Let's race up to very recently then, and Coronation Street. Had you been in Corrie playing any bit parts before that?
No.
Because a lot of people have been in it and then come back later on.
Yeah, yeah.
So what happened? How did you land your part in Corrie?
It was a piece they sent me. They said, "This is a new character we're thinking of putting in. Would you be interested?" And they sent me a beautifully written piece about this guy. His wife had just died, and he was talking to the lady who used to do her makeup and hair. And it was so emotive. I said to my agent, "I don't really want to go into a soap for a length of time, but, you know, maybe they'll just let me do this short piece." So I went up, I got on the motorbike, went up there, and he said, "Would you do that again? I enjoyed it so much." I said, "You want me to change it?" He said, "No, just do it again." And by the time I got home, they said, "Yes." So I thought, in for a penny, in for a pound. So I signed for a year, but I didn't want to do any longer than that.
No. You went there for a year on Coronation Street. Yeah. Now, a year on Coronation Street 30, 40 years ago would have been, you know, a couple of episodes a week. It would have been, there would have been a lot of rehearsals and all the rest of it, because I've spoken to a lot of the actors who from back in the day. Nowadays, it's pretty intense, isn't it? So it was must have been quite an intense year for you, that.
Quite honestly, the job was fairly simple. It was the journey that was hell, because the M6 is a nightmare.
Yeah.
And that's what wore me down. And after 6 months, I wanted out, because I didn't want to do that journey anymore.
Yeah, of course.
That was the heaviest load.
Yeah.
You know, it was like greased clockwork, the production side of Coronation Street. It was run very well.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. What do you remember? I mean, obviously, you were coming into it in 2016, 17, so there were people around who'd been around in it for a long time still. You know, it was people, you know, like, you know, Barbara Knox and others, that kind of thing. You know, how was that for you? Had you met any of them? Had you worked with any of them in the past?
I knew Sue Nichols from years ago in London, and I've always known her and her sister. So she was the only person I knew, but Barbara Knox was divine, and so was Bill Roach. I mean, they were such lovely people. They were a joy to know.
Yeah, yeah. So you've got that one ticked off. You've done Coronation Street. You're pleased to have done Coronation Street then?
I'm surprised.
Are you? Really?
I never thought I'd get involved in a soap. I mean, I've turned down a lot of those offers because I have a fear of being stale.
Yeah.
You've got to keep it fresh. That's the hardest thing is in a West End show that you sign up for a year. How do you keep it fresh? And the awful nightmare is when it starts to slip away.
Yes.
And the laugh that you had on the first 2 months, you're not getting anymore.
No.
And that's, it's stale. You get overconfident and lazy. Mm-hmm. It needs a good shaking. It takes a lot of discipline.
Of course. Now, you're still going strong. You're still doing stuff. And mm-hmm. several people asked us to ask you what's on the cards. What have you got around the corner? Anything else?
I've just finished an episode of Casualty down in Cardiff, which I loved. Lovely people to work with. I'm just about to do a drama for ITV, the cops and robbers type of thing. And then after that, I can't think what the next thing. There's something else in the pipeline. I can't remember what it is.
So you're busy, keeping yourself busy, which is great.
Yeah, fantastic. Absolutely. After 2 years of the pandemic, it's a joy to go back to work.
Of course. So a long career, going back a long way. I don't know when you first started. You were certainly in the early to mid-60s, wasn't it? So
no, 60, September 69, I joined Equity.
Is that when you joined? Right, okay, yeah. So a long time. Looking back then, you know, what stands out most? You've done so many fantastic things. Is there any one thing that you would, if you could transport yourself back in time now and think, I'd like to go back to a period when I was doing blah, 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 what would it be?
Well, that's difficult because there's a few. And mostly it's theatre.
Yeah.
You know, I thought I did a... I loved my time doing Miss Saigon, playing the engineer. I loved playing Coco in The Black Mikado. And my 2 years with the RSC doing Shakespeare was phenomenal. I loved it.
And you did Dick Whittington, didn't you, in Manchester at the Royal Exchange in the 70s as well?
Yes, they commissioned me to write a pantomime and do the music and direct it.
Direct it as well, yeah. So that must have been a very busy period for you to be doing all that.
That certainly was, but so enjoyable, lovely people to work with.
Yeah. So looking back, in terms of, you know, the things that people remember you for all sorts of things, but just that sort of, for those of us of a certain generation, I'm 49, so those of a certain generation, for us, we think of you as that kids' TV presenter doing Play School. What do you think you gained out of that more than anything, in terms of what's that done for you in terms of your career and life generally, doing that kind of program, that kids program?
Not necessarily for my kids. Yeah, not for my career, but what I loved about it was it introduced my music to an audience. That was a fond love of mine, and I was desperate to get and make myself a better musician and compose and leave a legacy for kids with some music.
Yeah.
You had Danny Kaye doing Hans Christian Andersen. His stuff at Inchworm. They're classics, and they've been handed down through generations to generations, you know, like Heads and Tails has.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
And Bod, and certain songs from Play School that were popular. And they will go on, and I think that gladdens my heart.
Derek, it's been lovely chatting to you.
And to you.
I've got some fantastic memories. I'm sure everyone will have enjoyed listening to this. And all the best of luck for the future. We'll look out for you wherever you next turn up, probably Casualty or this drama on ITV. Fantastic. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
the brilliant Derek Griffiths speaking to Ashley about his long and varied career. And if you've a favourite from your younger years watching TV or film who you'd like to suggest for a distinct nostalgia interview or reunion, drop us an email to info@madeinmanchester.tv.
As well as amazing interviews, the Distinct Nostalgia podcast is also home to an epic radio quiz.
Oh, I've never heard of it.
Where listeners just like you go head-to-head on their favourite TV shows and films and put their general knowledge to the test.
There's a bonus point if you can sing the theme tune, but I know you're not going to, are you?
Skippy, the bush kangaroo is all I can remember.
That earns you a point. Yeah, I'll go for that.
A brand new season of the Distinct Nostalgia Mind of the Month quiz is almost here, and it needs you.
Prisoner Cell Block.
Cell Block B.
Prisoner Cell Block H.
Simply pick your favourite TV show or film and get in touch at distinctnostalgia.com or by messaging us on Twitter.
Have a go at three British films. Just have a guess.
Oh, Whistle Down the Wind, Carry On Up the Khyber. No, this is rubbish. I'm sorry. No, I don't know.
They're not bad attempts, actually.
And the two leading minds from across the month compete head-to-head in the final for a coveted Distinct Nostalgia mug.
It's almost like a trophy.
The Distinct Nostalgia Mind of the Month quiz.
Got there in the end.
Oh, that's amazing.
They always are.